Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts. Arts and entertainment in our region as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Tonight we have music from Jay and the Americans in conversation with one of the founding members, Sandy Dean. Jay and the Americans are part of Legends of R&B, Soul, and Rock and Roll, along with Lou Christie and Little Anthony and the Imperials. That's coming April 22nd to the California Theater in San Bernardino. Tickets and information at affordablemusicproductions.com. We're going to start the program finding out more about the 2017 Riverside Film Festival, running April 21st through the 30th. Lillian Vasquez speaks with Jim Buchholz.
So we're here today to learn more about the 15th annual Riverside International Film Festival. And as the president, I know you know everything about this organization. But tell me what the Riverside International Film Festival is.
Well, this is our 15th year, and it's actually my first year as the president. For the first 14 years, Harkey Dillon was the founder and president, and he's now vice president. And he actually asked me to step in this year to take over. So Harkey's been the blood of this festival from the very beginning. It's a 10-day festival. Most years we've held it 10. It wasn't 10 days in the very beginning, but for most of the years we've been going 10 full days, and we'll show almost 100 films from about 20 different countries. And that's the direction we've gone, to have a nice long festival that covers two weekends, including the days in between.
What was the goal? Why did Harkey create it, or who got together and said, we need a film festival in this community?
It actually started as a sister program, meaning sister cities in Japan and other countries, where they just got together for one weekend. Harkey kind of ran this and showed films from different countries, and then they said, we need to keep this up and turn it into an annual festival. And so then, like most festivals, we got a platform for people to submit films. Of course, people just submit them to us directly, but then we started using Without a Box and Film Freeway, and these are standard platforms for anyone in the world that comes across us to submit a film.
And what are the types of films that are submitted that you end up playing over the 10 days?
You know what? I like blocks of films where they kind of all stick together, and especially since we take a lot of shorts and we tell people, hey, this is the kind of shorts we're going to have. As an example, the second night, we have about a 3.5-hour block called Fright Night. You know, they're all short films, scary short films like that. And then we have several blocks that are animation blocks, all animated films, so people know exactly what they're getting. And they're all shorts. I mean, we have animated films, of course, from the U.S., but from France, Iran, Cyprus, Spain, the Czech Republic. They're from all over. Now, we do ask when there are foreign films coming in that they are subtitled in English if they're not done in English.
So the goal of the film festival, was it just partnering with the sister station, bring it to Riverside and show this community? Or did he have a goal in mind when he said it? Or is it just to carry on what they had started one time and decided we need to make this an annual thing?
Well, I think Harkey's history with the area here, the Inland Empire and mine, are very similar. I came here in the mid-80s. I think he did too. And I remember having to ask, what does Inland Empire mean when I moved here? I mean, of course, living here now 3+ decades, I know what that means. But when you come from Texas and Indiana and stuff like that, no one knows outside of Southern California, and many people even in Southern California don't know exactly what Inland Empire means.
Right.
And so we have over 4 million people in this area, and we honestly feel you can turn this area into Hollywood East type of thing. There's plenty of people here, and this is the premier festival in the area. It's the largest one around. You have to head two different directions to get more prominent festivals. You'd have to head 60 miles into L.A. Of course, that's where Hollywood is. Or you have to head the other 60 miles the other way out to Palm Springs. So we're the ones in the middle. And you can say, well, you know, there's 60 miles from you in either direction. You got some big festivals. But there's 4 million people within a 25-mile radius of us. So that's a lot of people. And so we are about the Riverside community. And with that said, some of our most popular films over the years, and I mean popular by attendance too, by people showing up wanting to see that, are local films.
Oh,
we
nice.
Show a lot of films that were filmed here in Riverside County and so forth. In fact, the opening night gala film, before we have the gala, we're showing our film called Love in Moreno Valley is the name of the film. So obviously, you can tell that's an Inland Empire film. Mm-hmm. It was shot all over the county. We had a film a couple years ago that we had to show three times because the theater sold out the first two times.
Well,
we had to
keep. That's a nice problem.
Yeah, it is a nice problem to have. And it was a deaf film. And of course, in Riverside, there's the California School of Deaf. So there's a large deaf community in Riverside. And they came out in groves to see the movie. Even one year, real recently, we had a short film that we packed the audience with. It was a short film about, I don't know if you know what Pedro Pan stands for. Pedro Pan was these children that came over when Cuba was being closed down in the 60s, when they're being shut out. Children were allowed to leave, but adults weren't. Mm-hmm. And they called them Pedro Pons, all these children. It's like 20,000 Cuban children were refugees into the United States in a very short period of time. And the Catholic Church and others took them in and tried to find homes for them. You know, I'd never seen a movie with that being told. This short came across our desk saying, hey, here's a short about the Pedro Pons. We end up finding out the chief of police of Riverside is one of the Pedro Pons. And so we had a whole panel afterwards, and the panel discussion lasted longer than the movie. And so afterwards, we had several Pedro Pons come to talk and what their experience was, having to leave their parents behind and come to America to escape the borders being closed there and the lives they might have had to live on the other side during that time. And then we looked out in the audience. We asked, are there other Pedro Pons in the audience? And several had shown up.
Wow. So that's creating dialogue and conversation right here in our community about issues that are taking place right here. Very good. I know I went one year. I think it was Tippi Hedren, and she talked about her experience. She was being honored, I think. And so it's a great film festival, and I'm glad that you guys continue to keep it going. I'm sure that's not easy, trying to find funding and make that all happen. Why are you involved with it? What's your background?
Interestingly enough, I'm a professor at California Baptist University, and Harkey happens to be on the board of visitors at CBU, and he was looking for interns one day, and I was contacted because I make short films a lot.
Oh, because that's the department you're in.
Well, actually, no. I'm in the Department of Natural Mathematical Sciences. I have a
PhD
in physics. Oh, I see how
they closely relate. Yes, yes.
I actually teach a class called the Physics of Hollywood. I teach physics to graphic design students, film study students, theater students, and so forth. And I show them how physics is related to their field and so forth. And so I've been involved for some time making films and films with students. So it started with I just helped get the festival some student interns. And it just kind of built from there. And then two of my children who graduated from CBU ended up being interns for the program. And they asked me to be a juror one year. And then they asked me to be a board member. And then it just kind of built
from there.
Yeah, it just kind of snowballed from there.
Now, as part of the film festival, you also had a poster winner. I think it was Brittany Goff.
Yes.
Did that go out to a bunch of people? They got to send in their entry? Because what came back was really quite clever and cute. We'll have posted on our website. So was it a call for posters?
There was. I believe for this year, for the first time, we accepted posters just in electronic form. In the past, we've asked them actually to put it on poster board, this kind of sponge board, and we had hard copies to look at and stuff like that. But we thought that was maybe restricting. It's mainly for college students. We would send out an invite to several departments, to several different colleges all around the Inland Empire. We give a $300 prize to the winner.
Nice.
You know, so it's a decent-sized prize for a college student. And then their poster becomes the face of the festival. We put it on posters, tickets, the program guide, flyers, everything. It's a good thing for their resume and so forth that they won this award and everything. And RCC's always been heavily involved. They submit over a dozen every year. I would say this last year from different colleges, we had submissions somewhere between 35 and 40 total submissions we had to look. And of course, we have to narrow that down to one. So for that many students to be involved from different universities in the Inland Empire, that's a pretty good deal. And so when you finally pick a winner, you think you really have a good one. It's not just a few we're looking at.
It's very visual, very colorful. I really thought it popped. And what school was she from?
RCC.
RCC. Oh, wonderful. You also have going on the Lifetime Achievement Awards, the Legacy Award, the Music Award. How is that determined? And this year, Ed Asner will be receiving your Lifetime Achievement Award for film and television?
Yes. I was very surprised that we got Ed Asner. I was very happy about it. Ed, as you know, has been nominated and won several awards. He's won 5 Golden Globe Awards, along with a couple dozen nominations in that category. He's the former president of the Screen Actors Guild.
Yes.
In fact, the Screen Actors Guild gave him a Lifetime Achievement Award, one of very few they've given out over the years. He's a I mean, I don't know when you first remember him.
Lou Grant.
Yeah, Lou Grant is probably his biggest role that most people know him for. But he is incredible how he keeps making stuff and keeps making movies. You know, he did Elf, where he was Santa Claus,
yes.
And he recently did Up, where he was the grumpy old man. He still has a dozen things coming out next year that he's done. He has performed with so many people, not only just received all those great honors and everyone knows him for himself, you know, in Lou Grant, the Mary Tyler Moore Show, but, I mean, he's acted opposite some of the biggest actors of all time. He's crossed several generations. I mean, young people are going to know him from Up and Elf, and older people are going to know him from old black and white movies that first made him famous.
I remember some of the Westerns that he was in the early days.
Often played a bad guy, too.
He did. And then you have the Legacy Award, the Music Award. He had a couple of Lifetime Achievement Awards.
We started a couple years ago giving awards for music also. We wanted to say, hey, even though it's a film festival, it's kind of like an entertainment festival. So let's give awards in film, television, music, and particularly music in film and so forth. And so a couple years ago, we gave a Lifetime Achievement Award to Mike Love of the Beach Boys.
Mm-hmm.
And then last year it was Jimi Hendrix. And the way we came across the Legacy Award was we gave a Legacy Award to Jimi Hendrix's sister for, you know, keeping his music alive. So Jimi Hendrix gets it posthumously for all his music, and then his sister for keeping it alive. And the same thing this time, you know, we have Johnny Cash. And, of course, he's also passed away, the late Johnny Cash getting award. And then Bill Mills getting it for the legacy for having produced and worked and keeping his music alive is how we do that. And we've done that for the last 3 years, giving these music awards, and that's been very popular. And then our final award is for screenwriting. And we haven't, that's the first time we actually gave a screenwriter award that I can think of.
That'll be new this year then?
Yeah.
Very good. And so if people are interested in attending, being a part of it, if not the gala, but just going to the festival, what's the best way to learn more about it?
Probably go to our website. I mean, we have a Facebook page too, the Riverside International Film Festival. The website is just riversidefilm.org. I think there actually is a riversidefilm.com, and you won't find us. That's someone else.
All right, so let's not talk about that. Let's just say riversidefilm.org if they want to learn more about the festival, how to be a part of it, how to see the movies. It's probably a nonprofit with a .org. I'm assuming that you do raise funds in some capacity to support your endeavors.
We do. That's often the toughest thing. In my many years of experience of just being alive, I finally wanted to come up with some really important statement that I can put all together about what I've learned through my years of doing different things. And I could say the one thing I know for sure is there's two things you can never separate, two things that can never be pulled apart, money and anything else you can think of. Those two things cannot be separated.
Jim, thank you for your time, and we'll look forward to the 15th Annual Riverside International Film Festival beginning April 21st and running through the 30th. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Jim Buchholz for the 15th Annual Riverside International Film Festival, April 20th through the 21st. Once again, information online at riversidefilm.org. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, also at kvcrnews.org.
Welcome to Shout, Black Gospel Music Moments. I'm Robert Darden. Every major city has a custom recording studio where, if you got a little money, you can record your group, and in return, you'll get a copy of your recording. These custom discs also contain some of gospel's best, most passionate music. That's because the artists don't have to worry about what's popular or what will sell. They can just be themselves. A great example is the Old Rugged Cross by the Tabernacle Singers of Pleasant Grove Missionary Baptist Church in St. Louis, Missouri. Pleasant Grove was founded in 1914 and is still going strong today. Since the flip side of the 45, titled I'm So Grateful, is dedicated to the late Joseph O. Johnson, I'm guessing the release is a tribute to some well-loved church member. Gospel choirs love the old hymns of the mainline Protestant church, too. The hymns of Fanny Crosby and Isaac Watts are still particular favorites. In fact, in the early days of the Black Church, hymns are even called Watts. The Tabernacle Choir gives the Old Rugged Cross a slowly building surge-style arrangement, with powerful vocalists, a Hammond B3 organ, and piano all filling every moment with glorious gospel soul.
Oh, I've got an extra.
I'm Robert Darden. Shout! Black Gospel Music Moments is produced by KWBU, the Black Gospel Music Restoration Project at Baylor University Libraries, and is funded by generous support from the Pritchard Foundation.
You can hear Shout each Sunday morning during Weekend Edition and here on KVC Arts. I'm David Fleming. Coming up April 22nd at the California Theater in San Bernardino, Affordable Music Productions presents Legends of R&B, Soul, and Rock and Roll with Lou Christie, Little Anthony and the Imperials, and tonight's guest, Sandy Dean, with Jay and the Americans, a group which existed before any radio play as a college band.
Tonight, tonight won't be just any night. Tonight there will be no morning star.
I'd like to really go back tonight, to the earliest days, let's say at right. New York University even. How did this band even come together, and what was it at that point?
When I was going to NYU, we had already formed the first formation of the group. We were performing at Greenwich Village in clubs, in the Café Wa and places like that while I was going to school. And we were with the original Jay at that time, just doing record hops.
Is that John Traynor?
Jay Traynor, yeah. But there were different incantations of the group. In other words, the first Jay recorded, She Cried With Us.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight from West Side Story was actually the first recording we did on UA, because the movie was coming out. Mm-hmm. So they had us do the teen version of Tonight.
Oh, sweet.
And that got us started because it became a territorial hit, you know, on the East Coast and Northeast.
Nice.
And it did very well. Back into the studio and recorded She Cries and Dawning. And strangely enough, that record was out for 6 months and nothing happened. Because they were pushing Dawning.
She cried. She cried. I thought that our romance was over and done.
And somebody in California, and we're still trying to research who he was, locked himself in the control room, flipped the record over, and played it for like 8 hours straight. You know, they couldn't get him to stop playing the record. He loved the record. And it broke in California. It was the first place that She Cried became a hit. Now, we were in Liebman Stoller's offices rehearsing for the last recording session, because they said, if we don't come up with a hit, this will probably be it.
Oh.
Well, they didn't spend a lot of time. They had a lot of hit acts.
Sure,
they had
sure.
The Drifters and the Coasters and the Exciters and a million people. They were working with Elvis. You know, they didn't need to waste time on Jay and the Americans with a territorial hit. We were rehearsing very hard for the next session, and our manager came running into the rehearsal saying, we've got a hit record. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, somebody flipped over the record and She Cried is a huge hit. It's in the top 10 in California and it's spreading across the country. So that gave us a new breath of life.
Wow.
And then we ran in and recorded the She Cried album, which is all of the great Lieber and Stoller songs, you know.
Yeah.
Kansas City and a whole bunch of stuff they had written. And, you know, we wanted to be the White Drifters. That's why we wanted to be with Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller. We heard those records on the air and we said, wow, these guys are the best songwriters and the best producers, you know, violins and cellos and and all of the Latin beats going on.
Yeah.
And being New York City kids, we were very hip to the Latin feel, the timbales and the congas, and we couldn't wait to be with them. We got lucky when they took us on. But, you know, if that record hadn't been flipped over, I doubt very much, you know, if we would have come up with that next hit record.
It's very much a
fluke. You know, you need the chance. You need the chance. You got the chance.
She cried when you first heard it or read the lyrics or when you performed it for the first time. Did this one feel different for you? Did it feel like...
Well, here's the strange thing. The guys that wrote that song, they wrote that song as a country song.
Yeah.
And Jerry and Mike, they loved the concept of the song. That's the first pop song where a guy tells a girl goodbye, where he actually tells her to take a hike. And in all the other love songs, it was always the girl breaking up with the guy was brokenhearted.
Yeah, yeah.
And it intrigued them lyrically, and it was an interesting statement song, but they changed it from a country and western song into what they call a Bayonne beat.
Okay.
It's got that drone feel to it.
Oh, okay.
You know, and we thought Dawning was the hit too, but we liked She Cried.
Nice.
We never expected it to be the huge hit. You know, you never know.
That's Sandy Dean with Jay and the Americans. Jay and the Americans, along with Lou Christie and Little Anthony and the Imperials, will be at the California Theater in San Bernardino April 22nd. Information and tickets at affordablemusicproductions.com. You know, you spoke of this a moment ago, but I'd like to hear it. Lieber and Stoller, did the general public only know of the songs, as in, here's a song from the Drifters and Coasters, or did people really catch on to the fact that this was Lieber and Stoller?
Lieber and Stoller was the first Motown. In other words, they were the first independent record producers. They wound up writing, publishing, and producing their own records to sell their produced masters to major labels. Lieber and Stoller were so very soulful guys. They're into rhythm and blues. And even Elvis, a guy who's a rhythm and blues guy, he's a soulful guy.
Sure.
And the songs that they wrote for him, if you remember the first hit that Elvis had, Hound Dog, originally that was a hit by Big Mama Thornton, as blues as you could get.
Yep.
You know, and he did the Pat Boone version.
Yeah.
You know, he did it well. You know, everybody came in and asked them what they thought and what they could do to make it better. Bert Bacharach would walk in with Dionne Warwick demos for them to review. And I certainly learned how to produce records from those guys and how to write a song and how to pound the hook home. I mean, it was like making hits 101.
I've actually been fortunate to interview Mike Stoller.
What a sweet man.
Oh, certainly. Now, one of the things that I learned well after the fact, I think I may have heard this from Charlie Thomas. It's my understanding that Lieber and Stoller were the type of guys to wear, say, different colored contact lenses or a couple of different colored sneakers, things to set them apart.
They were hep cats, okay?
Okay.
They were hep cats. First of all, their writing was literary, very tongue-in-cheek. They were very into black music. I think one guy was from Baltimore. They went to the churches to learn how to write. And that's what they loved. And they got together, and they only wrote either those comedy songs.
The Coasters.
The Coasters.
Yeah.
The Yakety Yak and all of that. And it was all tongue-in-cheek because they really were making political statements about how the black man is kind of oppressed. Because this is before civil rights, okay?
Yeah, by a few years,
They were writing those songs very tongue-in-cheek, but they were very hip guys. And actually, Jerry Lieber had two different colored eyes.
Oh, so it wasn't a contact.
He wasn't wearing contact.
Oh.
He had one brown eye and one blue eye.
Well, Charlie Thomas was mistaken then, okay.
Yes, he was. No, he probably thought he was wearing one contact only.
Yeah, he referred to Mike and Jerry as some of the earliest hippies before hippies were around, is what he said, or something to that effect.
They invented the genre.
Good
I
for
mean,
them.
You know, they wrote such cool songs. The way they attacked the music, they always wanted to do that show, even years before it happened. a Smokey Joe's Cafe.
Yeah, yeah.
They were working on that song when we walked in the doors, and that was in 1960. So these guys were way ahead of the curve. And that's why later on when I produced a couple of the albums for the group,
yep,
you end up having hits off of the album. And that was really a tribute to them.
Beautiful.
All of us learned from them. When they produced us, I sucked it up like a sponge.
Good.
You know, everybody paid attention when they walked in the room. But that's people in the music business. Now, people outside the music business, they really didn't know. They kept a low profile.
Okay.
Only in America can a guy from anywhere go to sleep a pauper and wake up a millionaire. Only in America can a kid without a cent get a break and maybe grow up to be president. Only in America, land of opportunity, yeah, would a classy girl like you fall for a poor boy like me.
Only in America. I understand that this song was originally meant for the Drifters. I'm curious what happened that it went to you guys.
We were cold at the time. After She Cried, we didn't have any hits because, you know, the songs were being submitted to the groups. And, of course, the better material was being submitted to the hotter act.
Certainly.
So we kept getting the leftovers.
Oh, no.
And, okay, well, it's how it, listen, business is business, you
sure,
know?
Sure, sure.
That's how it works.
Mm-hmm.
If we happened to be sitting in the waiting room, Jerry says, you know, you want to hear the new Drifters record? So we go into their office, and they play the Drifters singing Only in America. And we turned to them and said, wouldn't it be more natural to give that song to us? Because it's Only in America and Jay and the Americans. And the feel of the song was very much like what we were into. They said, listen, they're coming off of a big hit, and this is our best song, and we gave it to them. You know, that's how it goes. So we went home dejected because we said, we know that's a hit for us. And this had nothing to do with the fact that it was a black group singing Only in America in 1962 and 63, when civil rights hadn't even been named yet. So they submitted the master to Atlantic Records, and Ahmad Erdogan said, there's no way I'm letting one of my black acts sing that song, because that's a total lie.
Only in America can a guy from anywhere go to sleep a pauper and wake up a millionaire. Oh, only in America, oh, can a kid without a cent, oh, get a break and maybe grow up to be president. Only in America, land of classy girl like you fall for a poor boy like me.
They ain't gonna ever be president. They're not gonna, you know, it's,
right,
it's, that song is totally a lie to them. So all of a sudden we get a phone call from Jerry Lieber and Mike Sullivan. Hey guys, remember that song by the Drifters that you liked so much? And yeah. How would you like to record it? And now we're kids, we're teenagers.
Oh,
okay?
Yeah. How old were you, actually, at this point? 19, maybe? 20?
20, 21, something
gosh,
like that.
Yeah,
but,
okay,
you know, we were babies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were swimming with the big sharks.
Sure.
And, you know, even though we were kids at college education and, you know, we weren't prepared for the kind of business that was going on, you know, that we weren't aware of.
Right.
So all of a sudden they say, you want to record that song? We go, absolutely. Well, come on down. And we go to the studio. And instead of them having an orchestra there, they have the track that the Drifters sang to that they already paid for. Of course, it's not in the right key for us.
Okay, yeah.
So we're struggling to do this song. And we get through it, but it's much too low.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Jay's voice and our harmonies are much higher than the Drifters. So we finally get it on tape. We're not happy about it. So Jerry says, well, you know what? Sounds a little dull with their voice. Why don't we speed it up a little bit? In those days, the technology isn't what it is now, where you can speed up a song in the studio on the computer and not change the sound.
Right.
In those days, you had to put tape on the capstan of the machine. That would speed the tape playing faster.
Okay.
So they did that, and it sped it up. And then when it went into mastering, the mastering companies, United Artists, said, sounds a little slow. Why don't we speed it up? So they sped it up in mastering. So when we heard the final record on the air, Jay remarked, you sound like Alvin and the Chipmunks.
I was going to go
because
there.
Because if you listen to the record carefully, you okay. hear that the voices are sped up, and it does sound like Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Oh, my gosh.
But, you know, and yet it became a hit anyway.
That is something
and,
to look
and we
for.
Knew nothing about the racial implications
no.
at all. We just loved the song. We thought it was great.
Yeah, like I said, I didn't even think of it if a group other
well,
than
I'm
yourself.
Well, Ahmad Erdogan thought of it.
Yeah, well, that's good for him. I mean, that's forward yeah. and thankful, I suppose.
Yeah.
That's Sandy Dean with Jay and the Americans. Jay and the Americans, along with Lou Christie and Little Anthony and the Imperials, will be at the California Theater in San Bernardino April 22nd. Information and tickets at affordablemusicproductions.com. More with Sandy just ahead. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Also at kvcrnews.org. Back now to Sandy Dean with Jay and the Americans. Plenty of hits to get to with this group, but they weren't doing just records.
Hey, Jay, you look sharp.
Man, you know why. It's that trim HIS look.
It sure swings.
It's got a swing. It's the in look made for the guy on the go-go.
HIS! The guy on the go-go. The guy on the go-go. HIS! The guy on the go-go. HIS! HIS!
Yeah, we did that commercial.
Yeah. How did you get this gig?
You know what? We got that gig because we were becoming very big.
Okay.
HIS was a big New York brand, and the advertising agency came to our manager and said, hey, let these guys do a commercial.
Okay.
It's real simple.
And when the song starts, is it by chance you the one saying, hey, Jay, you sure look sharp?
No, it's okay. not me.
Okay.
I remember right, it might have been Kenny.
Okay, Kenny Vance. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, wow.
In a little cafe, just the other side of the border, she was sitting there giving me looks that made my mouth water.
Okay, going back to Jay and the Americans tunes, come a little bit closer. Oh my God, that's the biggie.
That was the song that almost never happened.
Almost never happened. Okay, well this is another,
yeah.
I've got to hear that.
We would do 3 hours in a recording studio doing a session. They wanted you to get 3 songs done in 3 hours. That was what they tried to do. So we would all naturally decide on what songs. Yeah, we would pick the songs together.
Okay.
So we had these 3 songs that we were working on. And Wes Farrell brought Come a Little Bit Closer. And Jay didn't like the song at all. So we were working on 3 other songs with Artie Ripp. That was Buddha Records.
Ah.
We had switched producers. We were working on that and 2 other songs that I really don't remember. And Jay liked the 2 other songs and Charity, you know, he likes Delton.
Yeah.
So we would sneak up to Wes Farrell's office and work on Come a Little Bit Closer without Jay because he didn't like the song. And we would work on harmonies for the chorus. I mean, we really loved the song. And we said, you know, we'll try and talk them into it. You know, we kept trying to work. So we went into the studio and we finished the 3 songs fast. And we had a lot of time left over. And they said, well, it's free studio time. What do you want to do with this? You know, we got time. You got anything you got on the back burner? So we said, yeah. And we started to do Cumberland. And we had it nailed. We knew it. All Jay had to do was sing the melody.
He just had to be the lead guy.
All he had to do was just sing the lyric. He knows the song.
Yep.
It was too easy for him, you know. So we go in and we do it. And Jay was not killing himself over it. We finish and we leave. So UA had four songs. And naturally, they should come a little bit closer to release. And we're riding in the car. And Jay hears on the radio, new Jay the American single, come on, and he stops the car. There were no cell phones then.
Yeah.
Stops the car, pulls over to a payphone on the street, and calls up Mike Lipton of United Artists. How dare you release that piece of crap? How dare you release that song? And Mike says to him, well, it's number 19 with a bullet next. And Jay said, never mind. Click.
The three magic words, with a bullet.
Yeah. Yeah, with a bullet. Sometimes man makes plans and God laughs. You know? It's just the way it is.
Indeed.
It's one of the three biggest records we ever had.
Oh, it surely is. And I also read that this was the song that got you onto the Beatles' first American tour. So, wow, I would just like to know when and how did you even find out about that? It's more than your next gig. This is a tour with the Beatles.
Yeah. No, you see, you're wrong, because the Beatles were first coming to the States.
Okay.
And we were a hit act. We knew about them from the newsreels and the girls screaming.
Yeah.
But nobody knew that they were going to be that.
Okay.
Okay, you know, I want to hold your hand and she loves you and all of the screaming and yelling in England.
It's bubblegum.
And landing in the States. But yeah. There were mixed reviews. If you know a guy named Murray Vickay,
okay.
He's a huge DJ in New York.
Okay.
He was the man, and he was on the radio, and he said, listen to that. They sound like a garage band.
Whoa.
Because at the time, we were trying to make audio records that were perfect.
Yeah.
We were booked because there was a snowstorm. There was a snowstorm in New York and Washington, and a lot of the acts that were booked on the Beatles show. This is the first Beatles show in the United States.
Right.
In Washington, D.C., at the Coliseum. And Murray went on the air and said, listen to these guys. They sound like a garage band.
Mm.
You know, they got long hair and accents. They're nothing. And then 2 months later, he named himself the Fifth Beatle because the wave had started. And he did become the Fifth Beatle. He hung out with those guys a lot.
Oh.
You know, but that's what I mean. So we get the gig because several people that were booked on the show couldn't get to the show.
Oh, wow.
That's why if you look at some of the posters, our name is an audience.
Right.
So they call us and say, quick, you got to get to Washington right away. You're going to play at the Washington Coliseum with you, the Beatles, the Righteous Brothers,
yep.
And a couple of other acts. So we said, fine. We're driving, and we pull up as we approach the Washington Coliseum. Jay looks at the marquee, and the marquee says, the Beatles and others.
Oh, no.
And he says, turn the car around. We are not playing this gig.
Oh.
You know, screw them. And we were all kind of pissed off.
Well, yeah.
I'll be honest with you.
Certainly.
But we called our manager, and he said, you have to. You signed the contract. When these guys went on, a sound erupted that I had never heard. Not in Yankee Stadium. Not, the sound pinned the needle and didn't stop for like 7 minutes. We had to hold our ears. The scream that went on was unbelievable. We all looked at each other and said, wow, something just happened.
Wow.
And it did. It was a phenomenon. And then we realized how good they were later.
More than a garage band.
Much more. And they were very clever. It was set up right for them. When they came over, they were singing those first two singles. They had already been in the studio in England They had recorded two more albums. I mean, you know, they were way ahead of the curve. Brian did a very brilliant thing with them, and so did the company. I did a show called Beatlemania, where we studied the phenomenon of the Beatles. And it was really the death of JFK and that timing. The country was in mourning. And when the Beatles came over, it was the first uplifting, happy moment this country had seen since the assassination.
That's Sandy Dean with Jay and the Americans. Jay and the Americans, along with Lou Christie and Little Anthony and the Imperials, will be at the California Theater in San Bernardino April 22nd. Information and tickets at affordablemusicproductions.com. The movie, Wild Wild Winter. You ended up with something small toward the end of it. The band performed, yeah. What was it, Two of a Kind? Is that right?
Yes, we wrote it.
You might as well give in, cause we're two of a kind, you and I. Yes, we're two of a kind, you and I.
They said, we did it because they said you can write the song and sing a song in the movie. But, I mean, it was the campiest, silliest movie I had ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah.
It was, like, so bad that at this point I look at it and I laugh. But I was in pain when I actually saw the movie when we were doing it.
Oh, it's a lot of goofy, for lack of a better way of saying it, dancing, and just it looks like every dance scene from a movie at that time, I have to say.
It was terrible.
Yeah,
it was terrible. Somebody sold a big-time movie company the idea of, hey, instead of beach bum bingo, let's do it in a ski resort. And some idiot went for it and gave him a budget. It was awful.
Yep. So it was not a song. Two of a Kind was not a song that already existed. You guys wrote
it? No, we had to write a song for the movie.
Okay. Now, I do understand, and please correct me if I'm wrong, the only version released was on the movie soundtrack. You guys didn't release it on
correct.
A record? Okay.
Yeah, no, we weren't releasing that.
Okay.
He
okay.
also played with the Rolling Stones.
Really?
On their first time over.
Really?
So we're playing in New York City. This was Brian Jones. They were just coming to the States. They really, you know, weren't huge like they are, you know, like they became.
Right.
But, you know, English groups, when they came over, they were big time. So the lines were around the block. The police barricades were up. Kids were screaming every time you walked past the window, no matter who it was. They all thought it was Mick or Brian. Or, you know, the screams went up. We're getting ready to do the show. We're opening and they're closing. And the promoter, Sid Bernstein, comes running over and says, listen, guys. And we were friendly with Sid. I mean, he's the guy that brought these people over.
Sure.
Sid Bernstein says, listen, guys, you got to do me a favor. And we said, what's that, Sid? He says, well, he says, you're going to have to close because the Stones have a television show they have to do. Mm-hmm. And if they go on last, they'll never make the TV show. So you're going to have to close.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, thanks a lot, Sid. And the Stones go on, tear the place apart. And then as they run off the stage, the crowd runs out of the building with them.
Oh, no.
And we go on and we play for the cleanup crew.
Oh, no, God.
I mean, come on, let's face it, you know, it happened.
Yeah.
We did get a standing ovation from the cleanup crew, though.
God bless them.
So I thought that's a story you might like.
Indeed. Oh, my gosh. Just a couple more things here, Sandy. I appreciate the extra time, too, by the way, but talking about people that became something else or something much bigger later, I was also excited to read that in 71 or so, part of your touring band included Walter Becker and Donald Fagen.
Yeah, we got them started.
Yeah.
We hired them as our keyboard player and bass player because they were such brilliant songwriters.
Mm-hmm.
And we had Jada Productions. And they were signed to us, and we were trying to get them going. Kenny produced the demos, because I was producing the group, Jay and the Americans. Mm-hmm. So he would produce the new people, and he did a great job. And we took them to every major player in the music business, and we played their demos. You name it, we got in. because we were very hot and everybody wanted to talk to us. So we said, hey, here's somebody that we want you to take on, and they all passed. Everybody passed. They said, nah, they're too esoteric, they're too this, they're too that.
Right.
And they stayed with us for about 3.5-4 years. We got into a legal dispute with United Artists, and rather than let them take the fall with us over the lawsuit, we released them, gave them to our friend Gary Katz, who took them to California and got them hired as staff writers at ABC Records. And then they said, you know what? These guys can't write for other people. They're the only ones that can perform these songs.
That was the beginning of Steely Dan.
Yeah.
Wow. Time for one more thing to tell me about the Tuneful Trolley.
My little kid.
Yes.
Yeah. They came into the office and they were so young. I mean, I remember us being that young and we hadn't even formed groups yet. They were playing and they wrote these songs. They were just so cute. I just got a kick at it. That they had the moxie to come into the office and say, hey, come see us. And I went to their house. So I started working on their songs with them, you know, Lieber and Stoller style.
Yeah.
You know, rearranging and putting it together. And then I still worked on harmonies. And we made this album. And my friend at Columbia, he thought it was cool, too. He says, wow, Beatlesque. And I said, well, we didn't intend to do that, but it's just how it came out, you know? He bought it. Nothing happened. It was released here. But evidently, the people in England discovered it maybe 10, 12 years later. And it became a big cult hit over there.
Oh, wow. By the time these guys were finally in their mid-20s.
Yeah, by the time that they packed it in.
Oh, no.
You know?
Wow. That is funny. That is great. I was hoping to ask that.
Yeah.
Okay. Leave it at this. A game that I enjoy playing these days is quietly trying to predict openers and closers for some of the concerts. And of course, I'm saying quietly predict while I'm talking about broadcasting things on regional NPR. I'm really torn with you guys. I can really see you guys bursting in with this magic moment. I can also see that being a big closer. But come a little bit closer, or is this going to be a surprise?
We have a set order. We close with This Magic Moment, which is our biggest record.
Okay.
But we do play Come a Little Bit Closer right before. So it's a very powerful finish to the show.
Ah, beautiful. So you're leading up to it then. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, thank the Lord. We have a lot of hits. We're very blessed.
Yeah.
You know, better to be lucky than smart. And we've got enough material to do 90 minutes with very little material that isn't on.
Truly. Sandy, I live and work not too far from the California Theater, where you will be in San Bernardino in just
a moment. Well, come see us.
Oh, you got that right. This is something to look forward to. This was a wonderful conversation.
Well, we're looking forward to the show. It's a great show.
Indeed.
I mean, you got three headline acts all performing in one show. It's going to be very cool.
That's Sandy Dean with Jay and the Americans. Jay and the Americans, along with Lou Christie and Little Anthony and the Imperials, will be at the California Theater in San Bernardino April 22nd. Information and tickets at affordablemusicproductions.com. That's just about going to wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Sandy Dean with Jay and the Americans, and thanks to Nathan Gothels with Affordable Music Productions for setting up the interview. Thanks again also to Jim Buchholz, serving as president with the 15th Annual Riverside Film Festival. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Lindsay Boyd, and Mike Pesavento. Beyond the music of, for the most part, Jay and the Americans, music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, behind us now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVC Arts programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. And David Fleming, thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.